Discussions in Bangkok at the Foundation with the Jan Suchin, July 2001. Edited by Jonathan and Sarah. July 28th, with Eric and friends.
My Theravada has been the Visuddhimagga, and I am not finished reading the entire Visuddhimagga, but I have been studying it for a few months now. I began really practicing in Zen, and then I studied Tibetan Buddhism under Saramay Khenpsar Geshe Lobsang Thakshin, who is the abbot of Saramay Monastery of Tibet, one of the highest-ranking lamas in North America now. His teachers were the Dalai Lama's private tutors, Kyabje Trizang Rinpoche, Kyabje Ling Rinpoche, Kyabje Pabongka Rinpoche. He is a master of Buddhist logic, Majjhimika Prasangika logic, and a master of Buddhist debate, and a master of Buddhist tantra. So he is my primary teacher.
And the purpose of studying?
The purpose of studying is to achieve Buddhahood in this lifetime.
And what is Buddhahood?
Well, Buddhahood in the definition of Mahayana is...
I think that if we leave all the terms, personal term like Mahayana or Hinayana, is your own understanding now.
Yeah. Buddhahood is full awakening, complete awakening to all realities, plus all of the abhinyas of a Tathagata.
You mean this moment?
In this moment as well as in general. I'm speaking conventionally here.
Yeah, but what is real at this moment now?
I'm not sure I understand.
Should that be known? What is real now? That everyone knows about it, like seeing, hearing. Is seeing real?
Trying to understand how to phrase that.
Because what you take for yourself on the world, in the absolute sense, there must be the nature or element which can be divided into two categories. Mm-hmm. The one which cannot experience anything at all, and the other one can experience, can know, can cognize object like now.
Okay.
If there is only the reality which cannot experience, which in Pali we use the term rupa, If there is only rupa without any experiencing of rupa, rupa cannot be known or cannot be cognized. No one knows about it.
Right, there must be nama.
There must be nama.
Yes.
So what you take or everyone take for self or the world must be the nama and the rupa. Right? So at this moment, if we just talk about the nama, the reality which can experience an object, where is it now? Where is that reality which is real? Because we are now talking about elements, no one, no body, right?
Tattoos in this
tattoo, sense? That sense. We are talking about tattoos. When we talk about tattoo, we don't take any tattoo for self.
Correct.
Of something.
Correct.
At
Correct.
All.
Correct.
So now we talk about the nama tattoo.
Okay.
And the rupa tattoo.
Okay.
And when we talk about nama tattoo, it must be a reality which is real.
Real and in what sense? Real in a self-existent
no,
sense?
No, no self,
okay.
No one, only
okay.
Tattoo. We are talking about tattoo. So there must be the tattoo which can experience an object and the tattoo which cannot experience. Where are they now? When we talk about something, it must be real. Otherwise, we just talk about idea or concept that we cannot
Correct.
Really prove it.
Correct.
But since it,
but
nama.
But what is real? See, this is the
nama tattoo. The nama tattoo.
What you mean by definition real?
The nama tattoo is real, and the rupa tattoo is real.
But real in what way?
Excuse me, we just talk about nama tattoo and rupa tattoo.
Mm-hmm.
So they must be real. Otherwise, why should we talk about nama tattoo and rupa tattoo if they are not real?
Well, but real in what sense? Real as absolute existence or real in the sense of being conditioned phenomena?
Now we talk about the definition, but first we have to go step by step.
Okay,
like
because
whether
because,
nama and rupa is real.
Because very important for me now is, as you know, the Tibetan presentation is very different from the Theravada presentation.
Yes, but I do not want to use any term like Theravada.
Oh, no.
Because Buddha taught the same thing about reality.
I understand, and I just want to make sure that we are using same definition.
I don't use any definition, but I use about the direct characteristic of reality that anyone who listens can detect or can prove or can understand instantly.
Okay.
So we don't name it Mahayana
okay.
or Theravada.
Okay.
Now, when we talk about anything which is real, it means that there it is now at this moment. It is real.
You like, mean real in the sense of Paramattha Dhamma?
I don't want to use that term yet.
Okay.
I just want to talk in general about anything that anyone can understand about what is real, not a dream, not imagination, because what is real must have its own characteristic. Mm-hmm. For example, sound. Is it real or not real?
Well, sound is a composed
phenomenon. No. We don't talk about any other subject at all. In general, very general. For example, just very common, because everyone hears sound, right? When anyone who is not deaf can hear,
All I can say to that is there is hearing.
Okay, but if one says that there is hearing, there must be the object which hearing hears.
Yes.
So no matter what you call it, sound or not, it's there, a reality, an element which can be heard.
Yes, there is experience. By hearing. There is experience
by hearing.
Yes.
So the hearing and the sound are elements.
Yes.
They are real.
Real in a conventional way.
Not conventional, because whenever there is hearing, hearing hears. Hearing does not hear conventional reality, but hearing hears that reality which can be heard only when there is the ear base.
In that exact moment.
In that exact moment.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
So it's real. So reality is each moment.
Yes.
And each moment cannot be taken for self.
Correct.
Or thing at all. So this is Paramattha Dhamma.
Right.
So we will talk in terms of Paramattha Dhamma.
Yes. Yes.
No you, no Eric, no me. There are only Paramattha Dhammas.
Yes. Yes.
And Panya. Is real?
Panya is absence of greed, hatred, delusion, in my definition.
When we talk about sound, it's real. When we talk about visible object, it's real. As sound is real, visible object is now a reality, right?
Yes.
And the seeing is real.
Yes.
And the hearing is real.
Yes.
And thinking is real.
Yes.
And right understanding is real. No one, only elements, nama
right,
elements.
Right understanding in what way? In the conventional sense? Right. Samadhi or
Right understanding is the reality which can understand. Reality as it is. As it is.
As it is, okay.
Yeah. So that is panya.
Okay.
Panya is real.
Yes.
In that sense.
In that sense.
Yeah,
that
absolute sense. Yes. Panya does not belong to anyone.
Correct.
Does not belong to even Buddha himself.
Does not belong to Buddha, does not belong
to any teacher.
Self, does not belong to any object existent.
Yeah. So what can Panya understand at this moment?
Panya can understand reality as it is.
So this moment, seeing, is the nama, the no shape, no form, and the visible object is also a reality, but it is rupa, right? So there are only nama and rupa which arise and falls away in split seconds.
Yes.
And this is Paramattha Dhamma. So Panya can understand this by hearing first, because right understanding has to develop. It does not stay just there, but it can develop on and on and on.
Yes.
And when reality arises and falls away by conditions, Panya can understand
the cessation.
The moment, which is nama, which experience, or the rupa, which is seen or heard, as it is or as they are.
Yes.
And this is panya.
And as they are is anicca, dukkha, anatta.
The anicca, dukkha, anatta is the arising and falling away in the absolute sense of dukkha. Because dukkha doesn't mean only the unpleasant feeling.
Right.
It has to be discerned. Otherwise, we just talk about arising and falling away, but what arises and what falls away? There are three kinds of dukkha, right?
There's the dukkha of dukkha, the dukkha of change, and pervasive dukkha.
Yeah, and what is the dukkha of dukkha?
The dukkha of dukkha is when I hit my hand and, ouch, hurts.
And that unpleasant bodily feeling is dukkha, and also mental feeling too.
Yes, unpleasant mental feeling. Yeah.
But why there are these three dukkhas, stage by stage?
Why did the Buddha teach
that? Yeah, stage by stage. Stage by stage.
I've never heard it presented as stage by stage, per se, but the coarsest form of dukkha is the dukkha. If I hit my hand, it hurts very, very clearly. I know that it's a very, very clear, sharp feeling of dukkha. The dukkha of change explains in such a way that even pleasant sensations which arise cease, and when they cease, the cessation of that is dukkha. And then pervasive dukkha is the fact that all conditioned phenomena,
including the two,
including the previous two, are also dukkha. Yeah.
So why there are three then? Why cannot there be only just the third one?
Because it's not a helpful way of thinking about things.
Or because in Adair, we can feel or know about the first dukkha.
Aha.
Very, very clearly.
Yeah.
Anyone who cries, anyone, we know that that is dukkha or hurt like this. And the second one is more difficult, just a little difficult and more and more difficult.
Yes.
The second one, how can we know that it's dukkha?
How can we know that the second one is?
The second dukkha is.
Well,
because the first dukkha is the unpleasant bodily and mentally feeling.
The second dukkha arises from the grasping at situations and things which do not match our expectations.
Can you give example in daily life?
Boy, I'm getting really called on it here, huh? Let's see if I can come up with a good one. Say I have a pleasant experience, like my new flat. It's very, very nice. Now say I run out of money and I no longer have that flat anymore and I have to live very poor and everything like that. The dukkha that would arise for me in that is my own lopa.
But isn't it the first dukkha?
The dukkha of change?
Not yet, because the unpleasant feeling that you feel when you have such situation. Because reality changes from moment to moment all the time. So what is the second dukkha?
The second dukkha is... I've never actually had to describe this before, so I'm caught at a loss. I'm going to pass.
Change position? Would that be second?
The analogy that I've used in the past is you sit, right, you're comfortable for a moment, and then you're no longer comfortable, and then you have to shift position again.
That is the dukkha, the first one.
That is the first one? Really? So
because there is the unpleasant feeling, bodily feeling.
So how do you define the second dukkha then? Because I haven't heard that defined that way. I'm very interested now.
Yeah. While one is eating, for example, the first bite from the first dish, the second bite from the other dish. If you like it that way, you don't have to change from one to another.
Okay.
And this is life all the time in one's life, even in the bathroom. You change the toilet paper. See, even the toilet paper, you like this one? And then for a while, and you change. But it's shorter than that. The Buddha explained this by way of the feeling, three kinds of feeling. The first kind is the unpleasant feeling, the second one is the pleasant feeling, and the third one is the indifferent feeling.
Yeah, that's
including the all conditioned realities.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Actually, in terms of the intent of my description of the second form, I did mean what you just said. In terms of the pleasant feeling.
But one has to know, because while one is eating or doing something or going shopping or getting to dress, see, in daily life, one might not know about the second dukkha at all.
Okay, the way it's explained in the Tibetan system, which is
just want everyone to understand the nature of it, no matter it's under the label of Tibetan or anything.
The only reason I mention this is because the definitions sometimes are different, and I want to make sure that we work with exactly the same definition.
I think that we shouldn't follow the book by names, but we should develop the understanding of reality. Do you have such feeling changing what you like from moment to moment all the time? Different plants, different colors, different utensils? Different things in this room. See, that is the second dukkha. Not knowing.
Right, well,
but
for
pleasant feeling.
You have a pleasant situation, and then as a part of that pleasant situation, implicit in that pleasant situation is the fact that it's going to change, and as a part of that process of changing, that is dukkha itself.
We are sitting, we shift our attention from one object to the other.
Buddha explained this by way of three kinds of feeling. The first one is the dukkha, unpleasant feeling. And the second one is the even pleasant feeling is dukkha. By changing, it means that one has dukkha for change.
That is exactly the definition that I was meaning in my intention, just to be clear.
And The third one is the indifferent feeling. Even it's not the pleasant nor unpleasant, indifferent feeling is not permanent, arises and falls away, including all other two and the rest.
I would call that pervasive dukkha, just the characteristic or nature of all composed entities or all composed phenomena is dukkha by definition.
That is the third one.
Yes.
The third dukkha.
Yes.
So we can understand when people talk about dukkha, even the Four Noble Truths, the first dukkha, we know and understand what is meant by that dukkha. What dukkha? The first, the second, or the third? These are realities.
Conditioned realities.
Ultimate, or the Paramatta Dhamma.